You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. And welcome to episode 326. And in this one, I chat with Jeff, who has kindly agreed to share his story with us. And in particular, we talk about harm obsessions, postnatal harm obsessions, working through grief for his brother, suicidal-themed obsessions, his compulsions and the varying forms they took, his advocacy work in New Zealand, and much, much more. And thank you to NoCD for supporting the podcast. NoCD offers affordable, effective, and convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. To find out more about NoCD, their therapy plans, if they currently take your insurance, or to download their free app, head over to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories, or the link will be in the episode description. So thank you so much to Jeff for his time. I appreciated hearing his story. And thank you to you guys. As always, I deeply appreciate you listening. And without further ado, here is Jeff. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor and a privilege.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. Yeah, absolutely. So, I want to hear your OCD story. So please do share it in as little or as much detail as you want to share.
Yeah, cool. So my story begins, and I can pick the absolute day it begins, was a day at university. I had moved out of town to a different university, and I'd had a huge night out on the town, as you do when you're about 18 or something like that. And the next morning, I very proudly got up to go to my 8 a.m. lecture. For some reason, it was very important to me to still make my lectures after big nights. And I sat in this lecture theatre in the middle of the room, and the room started spinning, as you'd expect. And I lasted about 25 minutes until I just couldn't take the room spinning and me feeling sick anymore. And I snuck out of that room. And the sheer shame and the guilt of doing that, for some reason, that gave me a form of what I thought was claustrophobia back at that stage, this kind of fear of being trapped in a room and not being able to escape. And the way it manifested itself for me was this belief that I needed to escape to pee. I thought I needed to pee, basically. And, now I look back, it was absolutely OCD, and I had this checking or this belief that I needed to pee, and I would sit there the entire lecture for my 4 years of university feeling and sensing like I needed to pee, and how could I escape the room? I did all the classic things like, you know, making sure I'd gone to the toilet before I went to the lecture and all of that. Of course, all the shame and the guilt of that, I never talked about it with anyone. It was just this weird kind of quirk. I thought it was claustrophobia or something else, but I just, you know, battled on as you would. Skip forward a couple of years, and that sort of quirk stayed with me. It sort of continued when I started working professionally, and it came up, we'll say, when I was trapped in a bus and I couldn't see an easy way of when it was going to stop or whether there was going to be a toilet break. Or say on an airplane when you take off or landing, I became worried that I, you know, wouldn't have a chance to escape and pee. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, life was pretty normal. It was just this weird kind of thing going on. Next sort of OCD thing that happened to me was I moved town after university and I took a professional job and I started to get really active. I was into mountain biking and rock climbing and tramping and all these sort of activities. And from time to time, I'd injure myself. You know, that was not unusual. But then I would start overthinking the injury and thinking it was much worse than it actually was. So I strained my back at one stage. And from then on, I had these phantom thoughts about more pain in my back than there actually was. And was it spreading? Was something happening? What was going on? Same with my knees. In all honesty, probably some of the stuff I wasn't stretching enough, so there probably was some ongoing injuries or something underneath it, something going on. But I was taking it to the next level in my head and just always worried there was something bigger at play. Yeah. And, interesting, when I reflect back, I was quite happy to go and see professionals at that stage for an injury. You know, I was able to go and see a chiropractor about my back and say, hey, I keep feeling this pain or this or that, and I was getting treatment for that. But clearly that wasn't working. You know, that had become a compulsion unto itself. A rather expensive one at that.
Yeah. Just quickly on that, just to jump in.
Yeah, go for it.
So it sounds like, it wasn't necessarily a back problem you were having, but I predict you were maybe getting a short amount of relief straight after the session, because obviously if it's a compulsion, it's going to reassure you.
Yep, it felt good to go and see a professional for it and get some attention even for 15 minutes of somebody saying, we'll try this and do that. Yeah. And certainly it felt good. But, you know, a period of time afterwards, suddenly you'd be questioning again, what's this?
Mm.
But, you know, it was the same with that peeing one. There was a little bit in the back of my brain that was going, I'm sure this isn't right. I'm sure that this isn't an injury. This just doesn't feels like I'm making it up, but I couldn't verbalize that. I couldn't kind of put the words to it and say, look, you know, maybe there is something going on here. But again, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that I could still live and operate in that world, and that was fine. Mm. What really knocked me for six and really started to change my world was when my wife and I started having conversations about having children, which is what happens as you get on. And suddenly I just had these thoughts or these fears about stabbing my wife in the stomach and, you know, the harm I could cause her. You know, that's when those negative and those really scary, intrusive thoughts about harming someone else kicked in. Yeah. And it took us a while to get pregnant with our daughter at that time, but the thoughts kept coming back and I was terrified of it. I would wake up in the night and just hope that when I woke up the next morning, these sort of thoughts wouldn't be there. I was scared of them. I had times where I'd get up to go to the toilet in the middle of the night and just be worried that instead of going to the bathroom, I would go to the kitchen and grab a knife and come back. And, you know, I was just stuck in that warp that we get into with OCD thoughts.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fun. Couldn't talk to anyone about it. It was big and scary and beyond me. Eventually, you know, we did have my daughter. My daughter arrived on the scene, had this beautiful baby in my arms, and wow, and at the same time. And then, of course, OCD jumped onto the baby. You know, the thoughts were all about, you know, me harming that child, which is pretty normal.
Yeah.
And you know, every negative thought you could have about harming a baby daughter being a man, I came through my head. And after about 3 months of that, I just thought, wow, this is just too much. I have to do something about this. This is just not safe. This is not good. And I can remember sort of plucking up the courage, and this is about 2014 now, to search on the internet for what you do when you've got a mental health condition. And I even put my computer into incognito mode so I could search without there being a record, you know, what to do with mental health. And it's sort of the first thing that came up was, look, the advice was book an appointment with your doctor. And it's a good idea if you can do a double one at least. So you got a bit of extra time there.
Hmm.
And I thought, well, I can handle that. You know, I can do it. I like my GP. I can go along and visit him and talk to him about it. So I headed off to see him. And at that point, I was able to connect the peeing issue, the injury thing, and these thoughts about harming my children is sort of a connected feeling, these ideas of intrusive thoughts, this sort of pattern I could see. But I went along to my GP, laid it all out there. What do I do? And my GP sort of is a great guy and I have a lot of respect for him, but he basically sort of said, look, I think you need some counselling and a bit of help here with it. And I can recommend a good counsellor for it. Okay, so I lined up this counsellor. I hadn't told my wife about this, snuck off one morning, went and saw the counsellor, started telling this whole story about, you know, all these thoughts on in my head. I thought, one session, great, I'll be able to nail this, everything will be great. He said, no, I think we're going to have a few sessions here working through this. One of the first things he started questioning was, well, tell me about your childhood. What brought you to this room? And I said, what about my childhood? That's, you know, I've got these thoughts in my head. This is scary. Why do you want to know about my childhood? But anyway, one thing he got out of me is I lost a brother to cancer when I was 4 and my brother was 3. And I'd always thought that didn't matter to me. I thought it had happened when I was so young. It was in the past, and I barely remember my brother, and that's just the way it was. What he did sort of unearth in me was there was a lot of feelings there for my brother, and having a child had brought all this up for me. Mm. And so that started a really interesting period where I went, jeepers, I've got all this hidden grief and anger and all of this sort of stuff. And for me, it's manifesting itself in all these thoughts. Still had no ideas about OCD, but that, at least I had some sort of linkage. And at that stage, I was able to open up a little bit to my wife and start talking about it, and talking to a few other, you know, mates about, you know, having a bit of a rough time, and you know, this is some stuff about my brother that's coming up, and sort of putting a little bit of a story and a narrative behind it. Worked out he wasn't the right counsellor for me, but worked out that, hey, I needed to do some grief work with a counsellor. So I took myself off to a different one who was recommended, and I did some really amazing work just to uncover that whole grief about my brother and what was going on there, and, you know, talk and work it through, which was excellent, and it needed to happen. But of course it didn't solve the OCD.
Yeah.
And interestingly, kept talking to the counsellor, told him about some of the stuff, didn't ring any alarm bells. So for the next few years after that, I kept finding that, hey, I still had the thoughts. I was getting into a really highly anxious state. I was riding these waves where I was getting in, you know, having months on end where I was feeling very, very anxious. And those classic waves of stress plus anxiety plus small children, OCD thoughts, it was a pretty distressing period. I sought out another psychologist at that stage because I thought I had an anxiety issue, and thought, hey, I'll do some of this CBT. That sounds like a good thing. I told her about, you know, what was going on. Unfortunately, she didn't diagnose me either. I saw an applied kinesiologist, another type of person who sort of became a bit of a clutch, and she actually became a bit of a compulsion as well. So some of this became a bit of a compulsion behavior of when all the stuff flared up, I would book in to see some of these people. And it was helping. I was getting through the stuff, but it certainly wasn't giving me the answers I needed and helping me resolve it. 2017, we had our second child, so now I've got two. That brought some of the stuff up. The good thing was, I guess I'd gotten through the first child with all this OCD trauma. That helped get through, you know, the second child, but it was definitely there and it wasn't going away. What I found interesting and challenging at that time is the harm thoughts had transferred from my wife to my children, and at that stage it actually transferred to me, and it became more of a suicidal OCD theme that started to come in there, which was pretty horrible. You know, I don't want to try and compare one to the other, but that wasn't a theme that was not a nice theme whatsoever. So came through to about 2019, and I started a new job. I was also on the board of an international not-for-profit here in New Zealand. I was traveling a bit for that. I was working really hard, stressful with little children and everything. And 2019 was a really, really tough year. And OCD was really starting to peak there, particularly around that suicidal theme of OCD. And then luckily, out of the blue, I know the date, it was October the 12th, 2019, I happened to watch on Netflix, there was a series on anxiety. And there was Maria Bamford, I think is the comedian.
Yeah.
She happened to mention this thing about having harm-based intrusive thoughts. And at that moment, I just went, this is me. I found my people. This is amazing. And it felt like this weight had come off. I'd finally found these other people who were having these thoughts and, you know, on this journey. At that point, I just went, look, I have to learn about this. I have to understand this condition. And that's where, you know, your podcast became a big part of my recovery journey there. I bought a bunch of books and I basically just threw myself into this whole, you know, learn about OCD as much as I possibly can. Also, by the end of 2019, I was knackered, just busy working at work, stress, anxiety, all of that sort of mounted up. I'd been trying to see the applied kinesiologist and trying to sort of go down that kind of natural path of anxiety curing, and that wasn't working for me. And so at the end of 2019, I went, look, this is, at least I know what this is now. I've got a name for this. I need to actually put myself in 2020 onto a better path. I need to come up with a coach, someone who can help me through this. And I need to come up with a plan to really tackle this. And I need to work out what I'm going to do with it. So at that stage, I went back to my GP. I said, look, I now at least know what this is. It's OCD. And at that point, he went, well, that's interesting. I've only ever heard of OCD from hand washing and religious rituals. But thank you. You know, he was, you know, very helpful with that. He put me on some new medication, which, you know, both, I said, look, I want some medication to help take the edge off the anxiety, but I also want some emergency medication. And I want your help, GP, to find the best psychologist I can who can help me with the ERP and training through all this. I need a coach. I need someone who can really hold my hand for this. And 2020 is the year I'm going to blitz it with it. So I went into 2020 with that action plan of going, look, I'm on this. For us here in New Zealand, we went into lockdown in about March 2020, and we spent the next 2 months basically living in our houses. And actually, for me, that was one of the best things because it forced me to slow down. It forced me to stay home. It forced me to focus on a lot of this. I did see a psychologist in early 2020 who I very quickly realized I actually knew more about OCD than they did. And then it wasn't until I found a third psychologist in my sort of journey who has been excellent and actually does know about ERP and has been able to coach me. But really from there, it's been two solid years of working hard at retraining and reprogramming the brain from those pathways of OCD to coming back to the present, being back and focused. I think if you had asked me at the beginning of 2020, I wanted to be, you know, through it by the end of the year and recovered. It mm-hmm. probably took me the better part of 2021 as well. But I'm in a much better place now. OCD is a far smaller part of my life, and I've regained my brain power from it, which is a fantastic feeling.
Yeah.
Just another couple of things to tap on there. I found the OCD community here in New Zealand, which is a Facebook group, which you've already had Marion on.
Fixate, right?
Yeah, you got it. And that, my journey with OCD recovery has roughly paralleled the sort of growth of Fixate here in New Zealand. So there's been a beautiful sort of parallel here. And it's been amazing to sort of meet the people and be involved with that community and talk with others who have found it. I found that one really powerful. So, that's how I ended up here today.
Nice. Yeah, and I'll put the link to Fixate again in the show notes along with Marion's story. So, thank you for sharing that and such good detail. So I've got some questions around that. One is, when you first went to your GP, not knowing it was OCD, it sounds like you kind of shared everything, or at least the core of it, and that would have been obviously the violent, intrusive thoughts that you were having around your child at the time. What was it like opening up? Because I think a lot of people really carry that stigma and shame around these more taboo type thoughts.
Yeah, it was really tough. I think I had worked myself to a point of, well, hang on, if I don't share this, I'm doing more harm than if I do. There was a part of me that's going, actually, me holding on to this and feeling that is more harmful in some ways than actually the sharing it. I think that's the approach I took back in 2014. And one of the good things is, at least, you know, mental health issues, there's more and more discussions since that point in time. So I think these days, if I was back in that boat, I'd feel a little bit more comfortable than I did back then, simply because the weight of the stigma back then of mental health issues, or the unknown to me. Mm. It was a very unusual thing for me to know about or talk about mental health issues.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, it sucks that it took so long that you saw all those different providers and none of them really kind of said, hey, I think this is OCD. I can't treat it maybe, but I think you need to see, you know, whoever. That's a shame. And I saw a study recently actually pretty much showing what you've just said. With the violent intrusive thoughts around your children, and then with the suicidal themed OCD or suicidal themed intrusive thoughts, if you could just give a few more examples of, I guess, the compulsions you were doing around those two themes. And if you want, you can share the thoughts, but you don't have to.
Yeah, certainly. So I would say my compulsions would have been 95% internal, very few external. So the only external ones I can think of was, say, getting rid of the sharp knives in the house, which is one of the classic ones that people do. I guess a slight amount of avoidance behavior, but the interesting thing for me is I know I've got a huge amount of stoic and stubbornness. So doing things like saying, I'm not going to change nappies because that's a trigger for me. Mm. There was enough stoicness in me that went, no, hang on. This is part of being a dad. You have to change nappies. Mm. So it was more internal. It was all the internal fighting. It was the questioning the thoughts. It was playing games with the thoughts. So if I do this, then I don't have to do what the thought just told me, you know, almost toss a coin type games. And of course, if you win or lose, it doesn't matter. The thought comes back and you have to play the game. Mm. So rumination would have been the massive one for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And with like Fixate, how has being part of that sort of community helped you in any way?
Yeah, it's been invaluable. I think there is something so validating about meeting other people that have the condition and being free and open to talk about the condition. Mm. So I've run now a couple of meetups in the city I live in with members, and we've actually sat in or outside a cafe and actually talked about some of the thoughts, some of the topics, and we've actually been safe enough to do so at full volume. Mm. You know, it's not hush-hush and hidden. And I think all of us have gone away going, wow, how validating it feels to not only talk with people about these things, for them to not question what you're doing, for them to agree, even though they might say, wow, there's such a different thought or that seems a bit funky, but also to feel safe to do that. I think that's been incredibly powerful. And that's been one of the great things about the online community is there's that safety net to say, hey, I'm having a bit of trouble or I've got these themes or something like that and have it validated, talked about. It's been interesting. I had very early on, I had a beer with a bloke. I tracked down a local guy in my town who had OCD, and we sat down and we had a drink, and his was around inadvertently harming people was his greatest fear. And he started saying, look, I'm really concerned lately. I can't drive at night. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, look, it's because I'm so worried that I'm going to hit someone. And every time I go over a bump, I worry about that I've hit someone. I said, wow, that's hit and run OCD. You know, that's not an uncommon thing. And just the look on his face was like, no, really? Other people have had that exact same thing? And it was so validating for him and for me to actually go, yeah, look, there's nothing new under the sun with this stuff. Our brains are creating all this different garbage, and it's a safe community to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, great, great point. And, you know, just going back to the grief work you did, I mean, yeah, as you said, it didn't help the OCD, but you felt that it maybe needed to be done. How did it help, or what did it heal or do for you, I guess, in a clumsy way of putting it?
Yeah. Look, one of the questions I can never answer is, if I didn't have OCD, how would that grief have shown up when we had children as a result of losing my brother? Would it have shown up in some different ways, you know, anger or alcohol or something else? For me, it obviously showed up with OCD. And it's quite clear that OCD latched onto that fear that I had harmed or had been responsible for my brother's death when he had passed away all those years. It's all part of that tapestry, right? As, you know, with mental well-being now, I think is clearly I had some unresolved grief and need to deal with that death that had happened when I was so young that I didn't think I needed to deal with. So I guess OCD was where it bubbled up and how it came out, but it was probably going to need to be dealt with anyway.
Yeah.
Be my gut feeling. And look, it was hard. I had a really good counsellor for it, and it felt so necessary. Every time I went to him, I could just feel that kind of it just coming through and bubbling up and coming out. But it wasn't easy to do.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a tough thing that happened. And I think you raised the point of, I didn't think something that early on, I'm paraphrasing here, didn't think something that early on could affect me that much, even though it's a serious thing. It's your brother, and obviously I'm sure you loved him and deeply. Mm. But at that age, we don't have many memories, or maybe we're not aware of the concept of death like we are now, our age we're at. But these things, whether it's as big as what happened to you, or maybe slightly less big for other people or myself, they do leave an imprint, or can do, I should say. I don't want to say for everyone, but it always fascinates me of what that does for us in the future. I don't have the answer to that. It's just something that I guess what I'm saying, as a therapist, I don't look at that and be, oh, well, you were four, you know, so it didn't leave much of a mark. I'm like, no, it probably left a big imprint.
Yeah. Look, the other beautiful thing it did is it opened up conversations with my parents about it, who have always been completely open to it. I just haven't brought it up because I didn't think it had a part of me. It had a part of me. It just didn't feel important to bring it up.
Yeah.
And it was very good to sort of hear some of their stories and some of their grieving and how it went through. And that helped with my own recovery with it.
That's incredible. And did were they appreciative of the conversations you were having with them about it?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
Look, I can imagine it would have been incredibly lonely for them as well, going through the death of a child when they would have been mid-20s. And, you know, one of my fears, of course, was then I was going to bring up a whole bunch of things from them.
Yeah, of course.
But I think they've done their own grieving with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Well, look, good work. Roadblock. Any roadblock you experienced other than, I guess, the various providers not noticing it's OCD?
Look, the classic roadblock that I think a lot of people are talking about is the lack of trained specialists in OCD. When I went searching for someone here in New Zealand, you know, and doing Google searches and trying to find someone who's available that has experience, how few people actually do. That would be one of the biggest roadblocks to me. I think the other, had I have found out even 5 years prior, I think even availability of material on the topic would have been an issue. There is actually a lot more content, I think, even in published in the last 2-3 years, audio and print, which is fantastic, right? And there needs to be more.
I agree. Sorry, go on.
No, the other thing I was just thinking is, I think what helped me also as I went into that 2020 year going, I am committed. I am so in this. This is a focus of mine. Mm. What would have been also a roadblock a few years prior was even just finding the time and the space, having small children, and just, you know, busy, bubbling life to make the room for that. And as I said, I think lockdown for me was even an advantageous time to do this.
Yeah. That's a really good point about how our lives can get in the way of putting in the work or doing the homework or home practice, whatever it is. Yours came at this ideal window where, you were forced to be stuck at home and it was either, I guess, focus on this or probably drive yourself crazy, you know, being stuck in rumination.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. And then the flip side of that question is, was there a moment in your journey of therapy where something just clicked, either like how you viewed OCD or how you viewed the treatment of it, and it just made sense?
Oh, there's been a few of those along the way. Look, one of the first ones, I haven't got the book here, was one of the first books I bought was, you know, How to Treat Harm-Based Intrusive Thoughts. And it talked about the three minds being there, the worried voice, which is the you know, you could do something, the unhelpful voice that comes in, which is actually the rumination, the how about you not do this, or how about you do this as opposed to this, and then the third one being the wise mind, which is the final one that steps in over the top and observes and looks at the situation and goes, hey, look, this looks like an intrusive thought. Let's not pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Let's go off and do things you like, things you love, which is, sounds so unbelievably simple, but is so difficult at first. But just putting it in that very simple way, that I think was an aha moment for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And would you keep that sort of framework in your mind of when you were noticing you're ruminating, would you try and think, I'm stuck in this part of my mind and not in wise mind? Or
absolutely, you've got it. Yeah, so when I started that journey of really trying to retrain my brain, it was very much a, hey, identify this, I'm back ruminating, I'm having an intrusive thought. Where do I actually want to be? What do I want to be doing? I want to be doing this. Yeah. And, you know, when intrusive thoughts are bombarding you at a rate of, you know, one every 5 seconds, you have to constantly be on that path of, no, come back to the present. Where am I going? What am I doing? And what I found is, you know, that was really tough at first, really, really hard. But the more you do it, the more you're retraining some of those pathways, and the easier it becomes. Just took a long time.
Yeah. I'm glad you highlighted that. I often say that to my clients. We'll do something and they're like, yeah, I did that. And then, you know, a minute later or 5 seconds later, it came back. And I'm like, we'll do it again, you know, and keep doing it. And if you have to do it 100 times in an hour, that's okay. It may feel exhausting, but weeks, months down the line, you won't be having to do it every 5 seconds. It will get better. But it's
absolutely. Yeah. It's about cutting a new pathway, right?
Yes.
It's about retraining it away from it. And I think, to my mind, what I learned is the opposite is true, right? So when that OCD really started to kick in, the more you started to pay attention every time the thought is came up, the more it built on itself and the more it repeated itself. Yes. So I think it's something that the opposite is true, and something I'm very mindful now that I've reclaimed this space in my brain, and in OCD as a far smaller part of my life, is when it does crop up, I have to keep using those tools, because there is a risk it will unwind again and it will go back the other direction.
Yeah, that's
what it is.
Good point. Okay, so words of hope for anyone listening that you want to share.
So that's what I will share with that is, with the suicidal theme OCD, the whole thing around hope and the whole mental health, this kind of talk about hope, and there is always that became a really tricky nugget for me, because OCD loved to jump onto that. Anytime I would hear it, in a suicidal type thought would plug up, or it would be a trigger, right, for that. So I think what I had to learn to do with that, and I'm answering your question a bit of a roundabout way, was not to go with the thoughts, not to think about words of hope, but to almost go with where my gut or my heart was leading, which is the values-driven type side of things, which is almost turn off brain and just flow in the direction you want to go, because that's where your gut and your heart pull you towards. And that seemed to work almost better for me than almost thinking about words of hope or going through this.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, values are a big part of this podcast too. Yeah, gets me thinking, because I wrote that question from day one, I think, of this podcast. So maybe I need to think about it.
No, don't change it.
It's a valid point. You're right. Hope is very important, but it can also be problematic, because we can use it as a crutch. Okay, nice. I like that though. Values are crucial, and coming back to it, as you say.
And I think if you learn to also go with your gut or your heart, you generally go towards your values. So that would be my kind of words of hope, is, you know, when all else feels a bit wonky, lead with your values, which is usually your heart or your gut.
Yeah. What's important to me. Okay. So in New Zealand, you've got a billboard. What do you want written on that billboard?
Look, the activist part of me wants to splash up something about climate change and human rights, or do something like, hey, I've got a free space, I might as well do this. Let's go with something like, let's talk more about mental health. Let's push mental health and understand it as much as we do, say, physical and I'm just going to say illness, health. You know, one of the learnings I've had with this thing is if I had a physical injury or I had an illness, I would have no problem talking about those things. I would have no problem finding specialists to help me or to take whatever pills or do whatever I needed to recover from those things. Yeah. And yet mental health, for some reason, there is such a stigma in thinking about it, we treat it differently. We're changing slowly, but that's a, So I can't come up with my catchy slogan, but it'd be something like mental health is exactly the same as physical health.
Yeah, it's really important. I guess you just got me thinking about the, if we think, obviously, the large portion of mental health providers are therapists, psychologists, not psychiatrists. But if we think about, because trained to be a psychiatrist is an incredibly long process, you've got to become a medical doctor first and then specialize. So, and who wants to do that other than the handful of people that want to become medical doctors? But I guess what I'm saying is, even if we look at those training as medical doctors, only a small portion of those specialize in psychiatry. The rest go down, you know, what the various other physical health paths and specialisms. Yeah, so I guess it's kind of no wonder we're understaffed, so to speak, in mental health, because where would you think the brain is as big as the, it is the body, but it's as mental health is as big as physical health, you know? Well, not as big, but it's definitely way more than it's staffed for, I guess is what I'm saying.
The top 2 inches, and it's the most important muscle in the body, really, isn't it, when you think about it? Yeah.
And also, if your mind's not in the best place, it's also harder to look after your physical body, and then that causes problems later on down the line. So it's like the domino effect, I guess. So absolutely. A ramble, but that's just what came into my head of like, yeah, there needs to be some kind of increase. Obviously, there are more therapists than psychiatrists because it's quicker and that's good, but not enough. So last question, what is it? It is, yeah, you pick up the phone and call the 20-year-old Jeff. What did you tell him?
Oh, buckle yourself in. You're in for one hell of a ride. I don't think I want to give too much away, but I think that's all I want to tell him.
Okay. Yeah, just... Yeah, so maybe it'd be less of a shock for him because he had the call. Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, slightly. All right. Lastly, is there anything else you wish you could have said or shared today?
Oh, look, I've got 101 things now. I've lived in this OCD world I'd love to share, but let's close it off at that. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this and really appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, Jeff. Well, thanks for listening, and obviously thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip / donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. If you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.